Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast. This is episode number 204. Last week we gave a shout out. Izzy, I gotta recap this quick. Last week, just on a whim, we gave a shout out to anybody that lives in the 203, just because it was episode 203. And I guess that ended up being like Norwalk, Connecticut. And it's Greg of the Dead, Greg Sylvester. So shout out to the 203.
Oh. How do you spell Norwalk?
Just exactly like you would guess.
Really?
Yeah, except for it starts with a silent P. I'm kidding. I'm about to pee. But I do have to pee.
Interesting. Yeah, okay, Norwalk. Yeah, cool. Fun. Do you know the mayor is Harry Rilling?
Ah, good dude. Mm-hmm.
Of Norwalk.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, this is episode 204. I mean, I don't know if we're going to do a shout out. I think when we get in the 2 O's, it's like pretty common. There's area codes associated with them. What was the, what is the one from 8 Mile, by the way? Was it the 302? What's Detroit?
I don't know. I've never seen the movie actually.
Oh, are you kidding
what?
Me?
Mm-mm.
What is your problem, man?
I don't watch a lot. I'm not a big movie guy. 313.
The 313. New, yeah, that's right. New World. Oh, you got to watch that movie, man. It's phenomenal.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is really good.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, great tunes. It's like, I think it's loosely based on Eminem's like history, but you know, it's obviously dramatized or whatever.
Yeah.
Dramatized.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good. Good movie. Waylon loves it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you watch things just for pop culture. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now you're like 15 years too late on that one, Izzy.
I know. Like I'm tweeting about 8 Mile. You guys are watching 6 movie. 8 Mile. You guys gotta check it out.
I mean, you know all those conversations that you've been in about 8 Mile in the last 15 years. Now you can finally jump in.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
I love the. And this is kind of like a TikTok thing, I guess. But there's a. You know, Waylon in the movie 8 Mile, the scene where Eminem is kind of like in the club and he's rapping, everybody's bouncing like in the whole thing, just like with him, singing with him and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Somebody took that clip instead of like the 313 song that he's singing. They did the Fortnite rap song in his place. So he's like got the whole club bouncing and it's like, it's the Fortnite. Have you heard that Fortnite song?
No. See, I'm not into Fortnite, so.
Well, it's a popular song. I'm not into Fortnite either, but like I know the song and it's probably because I have kids, but.
Yeah, I don't have kids.
But it's maybe you have Mosier play that. It's actually super catchy.
Is it?
I'm gonna play it on my phone. I know this is not gonna make it in the cut out of my phone, but
we got a number one victory royale. Yeah, Fortnite, we about to get down.
Get down.
10 kills. Wait. On the board right now, just wiped out Tomato Town. My friend has gone down. I revived him, now we're heading southbound. Now we're in the Pleasant Park streets. Look at the map, go to the marked sheet. Take me to your Xbox to play Fortnite today. You can take me to my.
That's not bad, actually, for a kid.
Lake. I really love to chug chug with you. We can be pro Fortnite gamers. He said.
So you get the idea.
Yeah, I like how you revived this friend in there, too.
Yes.
He's about yes. The team.
The, and the lyrics are hilarious. But just imagine Eminem just popping off with that song coming out of his mouth on a big stage. And
you guys, like, guys are so hyped about
it. Yeah, it's in the middle of the hood. There's like blunts being passed around. So good.
Who's the actress in there? She's dead now. What's her name?
Oh, yeah.
Brittany Murphy.
Yeah,
she died, huh?
Yeah, she died from mold in her house.
What?
Yeah, they had her death, among many others, were one of the reasons why they started standardly building air exchange units inside homes, because there wasn't a lot of like ventilation, and like mold was developing inside the walls or something. The story is crazy.
What?
It's like mold was developing.
I thought she OD'd
behind the sheetrock, like, you know, where the studs are and stuff like that, and like causing them contamination over. They had like years of exposure, you know.
Now I'm looking it up.
It says she died was pneumonia with secondary effect of iron deficiency anemia and multiple drug intoxication.
Yep, and like, read what do you mean why? Like, what's that?
What do you mean the up?
It's just like the COVID death, you know, like. They died of COVID, but like the cause of death was many other things that were, you know.
Shit, wow. Drug intoxication. How's that mold?
See, I thought OD, so I was technically right.
Search Brittany Murphy and mold. Maybe like the mold thing was a cover up for the drug overdose or intoxication.
She's 32, man. Dude, she died in 2009. That's how long we're going back here.
That's crazy.
None of this is making the cut.
It said the Department of Health, who investigated claims, said mold did not play a role in their deaths. In fact, no mold was detected in a toxicology report.
I remember it being a big story back then. I guess it was defunct.
Mm-hmm. It says her death was originally believed to be drug-related, but a further investigation proved otherwise. I don't know. I don't know the actual answer.
It's kind of convoluted.
Yeah, I'm seeing yes and no of the mold.
Hmm. Maybe we'll never know.
Yeah, never know.
Oh, that is weird. Well, the reason I thought it was legit was because her husband also experienced some of the same ailments or something. I don't know if he died also, but...
I think they both... I don't know.
Either way, that's probably more Brittany Murphy talk than we were allotted for this episode.
I don't think I expected it. If you would have told me 5 minutes into our pod we would bring up Brittany Murphy's mold death, I would say no shot. Like, that would have been... It would have been plus 30,000 in Vegas.
Well, but the thing is like, you know, there's that one person that's listening to the pod that's always wondered about this, and now they're like, oh, this part was for me.
It's Greg Sylvester from Norwalk. He's like, oh, I wondered what happened to Brittany because she was from my hometown. She's from the 203.
Mm.
Maybe. But like, speaking of bringing up arbitrary things on our podcast, I do want to find out how you're enjoying your water pick, Izzy.
It's actually charging. It said to charge it first for 24 hours. I just put in the charger.
You got a problem, man. Like, jeez.
I know. I'm going to pick it out later. You know?
Dude, it's phenomenal.
Can you do like a live stream?
Oh,
get it?
I like that.
Mm-hmm. I will. I'll do a Periscope. Do they just still do Periscope, or is that gone?
I think it's gone.
It's gone? Damn.
Yeah, it's gone. Can we record it and make you into like an NFT of you water picking your teeth and like sell it?
Yeah. I'll do like one with clothes and one with no clothes and see which one sells for more.
What if he becomes a water pick model? Like, that's like what
that'd
it is
be
now.
Sick.
Oh, amazing. Speaking of models, we have a model draft to cover. A one-round rookie mock of some pretty big names in the industry, Izzy, right? Izzy participated in a one-round rookie mock draft. And I'm going to have to actually lean on Izzy for a lot of the details of this mock draft because I didn't have a lot of exposure to it. But, we're going to kind of cover it and maybe break down each one of the picks, just because leading up to the NFL draft, it's going to be nice to see where people are being mocked before, and then maybe revisit afterwards to see after landing spots what happens. But just as an idea, the people that participated in this draft, Waylon, you have a comment?
Hey, Izzy, welcome to the pod. How's it going?
I was going to say 204 episodes in, this is the first time we've never been introduced.
People know you. There's like literally like two new people that are like, yeah, who the heck are these people? And like, they'll figure it out.
I agree.
They'll figure it out.
I like it. No, I like it. Just go into it.
That's fine. That's fine. We can do intros. I'm the host, John Paul Hurley, on Twitter at FF Hercules. All right, let's get into it.
Okay. Perfect.
Just all cut all that out. Mosey has cut all the shit out.
Co-host Izzy El Kafas, Pharaoh Fantasy, Nicholas Whalen. On Twitter @_NickWhalen, throwing up the X.
Don't give it to you.
Throwing up that X. X has passed away. Instead of talking about Brittany Murphy from 2009, we should have talked about DMX.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's our problem.
It is. I think it's literally because it was like that moment when we were like, you know, that's a part of our childhood. And like growing up, like we listened to all of that. It's just yeah. like, dang. Mm-hmm.
And I'm older, so I'm a bit biased, but man, that guy's got some bangers. We were just listening to X Gonna Give right. It To You before the podcast started. We're all amped up here now. So like I was literally doing like I was bouncing off the walls and putting holes and everything. And he has a way of making you super angry. Like nobody else that sings has that effect on me, but I'm like, I literally have to break some shit right now.
But you listen to that and then you go lift weights. You know what I mean? Then you like,
oh,
you
throw yeah, up the heavy weight, there you go.
You know? Yeah.
There you go. And then pretend that you're X and you're talking to the weight, the, you know, the bench press. X gonna give it to you. I like that. That's a good idea. So we got this one round rookie mock just to give you an idea of some of the people that participated in this draft. Matthew Berry, you may have heard of him from such places as ESPN. Curtis Patrick from RotoViz. Chad Parsons from UTH. Pat Fitzmaurice from Football Guys. Our buddy, our good friend, Rich Dotson from the Dynasty Nerds. Love that guy. Ian Harditz.
Mm-hmm.
I was careful with that one. From PFF. Graham Bearfield. Izzy Elkfest. From Dynasty Trade Calculator. Zach Reed for the Dynasty Dummies. Andy Singleton from Expand the Box Score. Love that guy, too. Samantha Holt from Fantasy Debate. And then the entire HQ yeah. podcast crew?
Yeah.
Led by Dynasty Madman. Okay. So, yes, we got some pretty big names in the industry. This was one that had a lot of eyeballs on it, I would say. So, like, this is a good one to cover just to see, like, where players are being taken and maybe give you listeners an idea of, like, where stuff is going right now, just in case, because people are doing like startup drafts right now, and some people do rookie drafts before the draft. So like this is a pretty good idea of where some of the heavy hitters are taking guys. So I'm assuming just by looking at the draft, this was a 12 team super flex because there's 12 teams and quarterbacks are being taken early.
Yes.
PPR, I'm guessing nothing out of the ordinary, right?
Correct.
So let's get into it. So Matthew Berry drew the 101. And by nobody's surprise, he drafts Trevor Lawrence, and then Matthew Berry is out. Did he hang up the phone after he took? He's like, I'm done.
So he didn't want to. Apparently, he didn't want to do the show. So they gave him the 101 so he could make his pick and leave.
For real? Okay, I was just making that up.
That was the story. I don't know if it's true or not, but he did make his pick and then he did leave.
Okay. Wow. Participation.
He apparently didn't want to trade back in to the first.
No, he's yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, he probably could have got two or three firsts for that pick.
Yep.
Matthew Berry takes Trevor Lawrence. I think it's well documented, so we don't need to cover that in depth.
I agree.
Curtis Patrick from RotoViz drafts Justin Fields. Probably not a surprise, right? I'd say between Wilson and Fields, not a big surprise.
Nope.
You know, Curtis is from Ohio. Justin plays college ball in Ohio. Might have a factor. But, I mean, honestly, the top six picks here are pretty consensus. You just figure out whatever order you want it in.
I agree. And I think, didn't we cover that in the podcast last week where there's kind of like a one overall and then everything else is 2A, 2B, 2C, 2D all the way down for about six or seven picks.
Yeah, you know... Obviously, with Fields going two, we still assume that he's going to go, I think, consensus 103. I mean, that's the Twitter consensus 103. I put on a poll the other day, and I think he won 72% thought San Francisco would still go Justin Fields. So, and they're right now, they're way massive underdogs. Like, it's a massive underdog for Justin Fields to go three right now. In Vegas, I want to say he's... Well, Mac Jones like minus 600.
Who?
McCorkle Jones. Mac Jones. So there is, it would be a massive upset if Mac Jones did not go three at this point.
A massive upset.
Nice. So I wonder how much this changes in terms of where Fields ends up going exactly, and if he's still going to be the 102 come draft time.
Now, the big thing for me is, and I talked about this before the pod, I've changed my take on Mac Jones. I do like him now. And Justin Fields has dropped off for me. So right now it'd be Lawrence, Wilson, Mac, Fields, Lance.
Is there a reason why he's dropped off for you? Is it more because others have jumped him, or is there something that there's something that you don't like about Justin Fields?
I mean, you know me, I'm really particular about a lot of stuff. There's a part of his game when he's just really streaky where he'll make some great throws. It's so interesting when you study quarterbacks really in depth, man, people really have like their favorite things that they like to do. Mm-hmm. Like Justin Fields really likes working the middle of the field. And there's some quarterbacks, you know, that they only work the outsides of the field. You know, it's really interesting that way. But Fields, I think he is as athletic as he is. I think that he steps up in the pocket, he gets really close to his linemen, and that affects some of his throws. And I think like Wilson and Lawrence, I think they navigate the pocket so much more, so that way their passes can be more accurate. Do you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. and those little things, they add up even more in the NFL because guys are bigger and they're going to be more of a push there. I also think that Fields, he misses more than I'd like. He gets some passes batted down at times that you're like, why is that? But I do still like him as a player. I just think that maybe his ceiling came down a little bit for me. But overall, honestly, Lance went up for me after watching more film too. Like I literally tweeted this. I said, I like all five quarterbacks.
Yeah, me too.
And I think we can have them in any order that we want besides, I mean, Lawrence has to be one or two, I would say. But I think honestly, at this point, it's just like learning from each other about everything about them because there's so much. I mean, like I like Mac Jones more now. I might've come down a tad on Zach Wilson, you know, and that's just what you do. The more film that you do and more stats that you get, you know, the more stuff could change because they are so close.
I agree. I think all four of those guys are really close.
This NFL draft is going to be one of the more exciting ones I can remember, just with all the fireworks at the top.
And the thing is, like, they're all different. You know what I mean? But they're all good at what they do. You know, and their upside, everybody's upside is different. So it's just, it all kind of balances out to where it's like, man, I can see, you know, I can see me liking this guy more. I can see this guy being better than this guy. Like, there isn't a guy where I'm like, I don't like him. You know? I don't like mm-hmm. the upside. I don't like the floor. But it's not the case with this draft. So
it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to watch. And speaking of, since we're on the subject too, I tweeted this out the other day and we hinted on this. What do you guys think about the trade back this year? So like if you're holding on to like 102, 103, 104, 105, would you consider trading back to like mid to late first in order to acquire some additional draft capital in your rookie drafts? Like, you know, especially like during the draft when, you know, everything is hot because of how flat that second tier is?
Yes. Talked a little about this last podcast or the podcast before.
I don't think we covered it on the podcast. I think you and I talked about it.
Maybe. Yeah. But yes.
Are you talking super flex or are you talking regular?
Super early? Flex. Yeah. So obviously it depends on what I'm getting in return. But I typically like to trade down and I see this draft being roughly 14 players deep to where I can see any one of these 14 players being really, really good. So
get two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? Somebody asked me, should I do the 105 for the 109 and 112? And I'm like, yeah. Because now you get two of those guys. Sure, you don't get one of the top five if you have a top five, but you still get two of the top 12, which you're still getting a fantastic player at those spots, especially in Superflex.
So what's an example of like what players would, like according to what we know now, so like 105 would net you like Zach Wilson.
Jamar Chase, maybe. Kyle Pitts, maybe.
Yeah, so instead you'd be getting like Mac Jones.
And Rashad Bateman.
Yeah, that seems like a solid deal.
Or Jalen Waddle, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would take that. Mm-hmm.
I do so, like that. Waylon, what do you think?
So you're going 14 deep, is he? So five quarterbacks. How many running backs are in that top 14
three.
For you?
Three.
That's eight. And then?
Tight end.
You said 14, so tight end. So then only five receivers?
Or six tight ends.
I have five. I have five that I think could be excellent players. And I think right outside of that, I mean, at 203, if I'm getting Terrace, I'm okay with that. Tylan Wallace is nice. Amon-Ra's nice. Deami, but I still think like they're just a notch below the top five for me in terms of just pure like upside at the position where I think with Moore, Waddle, Bateman, Smith, and Chase, I think those five guys are just a tier above.
Right, right.
And you can make a case for some of these other guys being like, okay, they do have that upside, but I think their floor is a little bit lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, there's some other guys that I like too. I mean, like you want to throw in like Elijah Moore, I like quite a bit. You talked about Tylan. I mean, we didn't even talk about Rondell Moore, who's in there. I like Kenny Gainwell. You had some of those in there. I think that gets to be a little bit mid-firsty or mid-secondy. Sorry.
Yeah, but
after that, I wouldn't move back just to add in a late second. It's not enough for me. It's not enough for me to add in a Kadarius Toney to miss out on a guy I really like in the top six. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And that's kind of where I feel like it's another tier where, and Moore was in my top 14. So like Moore is in there.
Okay.
And then I think when we go through this,
Moore? Both Moores,
Rondell, or one more? Rondell.
Okay.
Elijah's in the tier below with those other receivers. So if you're like receiver needy, once again, I wouldn't utilize one of these. I wouldn't do the 205, 206 to pair with a first to move up into the mid to early first. Or I guess a mid first. Like I wouldn't move up a few spots and just scoop a 208 or 207. It all depends. Like you can put the trades in front of me, I can decide. But I don't think those players are in the same tier where if I get one of the top 14, easiest way to put it is I could see Waddle, Moore, Bateman, Smith, or Chase being the top wide receiver in this class. Like they have that's in their range of outcomes. They may not be likely, but it's in the range of outcomes where I don't think Marshall, Brown, the other Moore, Amon-Ra, I don't see them being Wallace. I don't see them being the top wide receiver in this class.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what's interesting too? You're talking a little bit more tiers, Izzy, and I like that because so many times I think that we get so locked into, well, this is the best guy in this prospect class, blah, 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 blah. But then you talk about landing spots, you talk about injuries, other veterans, coordinator changes, luck, whatever. That's why, honestly, when you can get more, dart throws, it's better than less dart throws. And we get so married to, like last year, okay, where do you have these running backs ranked? Because does the ranking even matter? If you were to get two of them, it would have been better than getting one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like if you had, you ended up with Akers, who again, I wasn't a fan of, but you were, if you had Akers and you got whoever else later and for Swift, probably better, you know, in terms of overall value right now. And people are like, no matter what, Ja'Marr Chase, he's this generational life-changing prospect. He's not. Locked into that.
Akers and Jefferson.
But here's the thing. Even if it's Akers and Rager, if it's Akers and Ruggs, sure, you missed, but you could have gotten Akers and Jefferson. That's kind of the whole thing. It's the more dart throws you will miss, but the more dart throws you have, especially if you tier them properly and you have them in your mind, I can see these guys hitting big, then yes, it's always the proper exchange. I talked about this on the pod, actually. Even the best, you can talk about all the elite scout guys. The guys have been doing it for, you can mention Nick Whalen, you can mention Waldman, you can mention a plethora of other guys. The best guys are still shooting, and this would be an elite number, would be 60%. Just like sports bettors, just like poker players, just like anything. If you're hitting 55 to 60% of the time, you are making money, you are profitable, and you are elite. Because at the end of the day, we don't know intangibles. We don't know exactly how these players are going to react to landing spots, to moving destinations. We don't know anything that's going on with them personally.
Massage therapists.
Massage. There's so much
money,
we don't medicals. Know. Yeah. It's just, we have no idea. So all of that gets baked in and you already lose a certain percentage of your hit potential because of that.
Yeah.
So,
this is going to be way off, but still the same kind of point. So, last year I made my first publication called Dynasty Startup. So it's everything that I do for a Dynasty Startup. And one of the things that I do is, this is a tip, not even close to rookies, but it doesn't matter, is beforehand, I figure out what my format is, my scoring, my rankings, and I get those tiers in. And there's a point in the middle of the draft where it might be eighth round, it might be sixth round, whatever. And after that, you're like, I really don't care about what those guys are. So at that point, I know that ahead of the draft. So what I generally do is I'd like to trade down to get more picks before that cutoff. And then after that cutoff, I'm doing 2-for-1s or whatever and move it up as many. So then I can get, you know, maybe my top 12 guys in those first 8 rounds or my top 10 guys in the first 6 rounds, whatever it is. And now I have this deeper team. So that way I can overcome these injuries, mm-hmm. bye weeks, things like that. And you never know what's going to happen. Guys are going to get hurt or they're going to make it with a new team or not make it. Doesn't matter. But again, it's more shots, which is exactly what we're talking about.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And you can actually do that.
And I just had a really quick follow-up question. So as far as like moving back in like, this year's draft.
Well, I want to know where the 9th round is. Frozen. You can type in the 901. It'll give you a value. And then you can cross-reference that with the rankings page, which also has the values of the players. You can say, okay, I can get X player roughly around this point in time in the draft. And then you can make your, you know, a guy like you, you could do that a lot easier than somebody that's not exactly sure of where these guys are going to land. So you could do that. And then you can create your own little quick like list of saying, don't anything past the 9th round. It comes a little sketchy for me. There's nobody I really love in this spot. So yeah, you can do the same thing. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Justin Fields, really quick,
I wanted to ask this really quick follow-up question on this conversation about trading back in the rookie draft, just to kind of wrap this up in a nice little tight bow. Mm-hmm. Would you guys be waiting to move back until after the NFL draft, like during your rookie draft? Or would this be something you'd be looking to try to accomplish now before people realize after. That there's just this big flat tier?
They won't ever realize it because they have perceptions of players because they've been fed it by, I guess, the people they follow. Yeah, it could be somebody I really like. Could be somebody, you know, there's a lot of guys that are very influential in the industry that people follow religiously, and they will follow them off the face of the cliff, or if they could, you know. So it's, I don't think that'll change.
Yeah.
I think that that's a question of two different ways to draft, JP. One is you draft based on talent. And or you draft based on situation. And I think that I tend to not lean as much situational based because so many of those things change. You know, Paris Campbell, oh my gosh, he's gonna be with Andrew Luck. He has to be so high in this class. Mm-hmm. Mecole Hardman, people went nuts and they became late first round picks. And now they look like eh.
Well, that was because Tyreek was in trouble, but yeah.
But I'm saying things change.
Clyde is the best example.
What is?
Yeah.
Clyde's the best example recently where
there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
He became the 101 because, and he was probably like 104, 10, or not 104, 105. He was probably running back 4 or 5, and he jumped from that to the 101 because of his landing spot. So, and I agree. Over time, I've shifted more towards talent over landing spot. And I used to be landing spot mattered a lot more. And it in my experience over time, it doesn't really.
Well, I think you guys are missing a big piece of the puzzle, though. Like, I think Clyde, talent landing spot got him up there, but also, like, him being drafted in the... So, draft, you can't dismiss draft capital either, you know?
No. But what I'm saying is, like, so if you are more draft talent-based versus situation-based, then you make the move now.
Yeah.
If you don't, and you are a situational guy, and that's okay, or gal, then you would wait post-draft because that stuff would matter a lot more to you as well as draft capital.
Yeah.
So the point, I think the best way to do it, tier your players. Landing spot should move players in your tier, but you shouldn't be jumping tiers based on landing spot. So mm-hmm. if I have my top three is Chase, Bateman, Smith, I will move Chase, Bateman, Smith based on landing spot, but I will not bring up a Waddle, Moore, Wallace, Marshall like into tier one because of landing mm-hmm. spot. That's kind of my new system over the last couple of years.
Really cool. So yeah, now I think we've exhausted that, so we can move on in the draft. So drafting at 103 was Chad Parsons from UTH takes Najee Harris. Pretty chalk again. I think this is an example of doesn't matter who you take here because they're all in that same tier. But anything you guys want to talk about that one at all or no?
Okay, so if you're drafting, this is what's difficult about mock drafts. If you're drafting early in the first round, it's for a couple reasons. A few reasons, probably. You're bad at fantasy football or dynasty football. You likely don't have a quarterback. So quarterbacks reign supreme in early drafts because a lot of teams that struggle, they're usually not like missing a running back. They didn't become the 101, 102, 103 because they were missing one running back. it was likely they were missing a big piece. And typically, if you look across the worst teams, they're likely saddled by bad quarterback play. So with Najee, it seems like at 103, he seems like, okay, I'm missing that running back piece to put me over the edge. So I look at it and say that player, that person at 103 that needs Najee is probably better off, or thinks they need Najee, is probably better off trading down and acquiring more picks instead of drafting one running back. That makes sense. But the pick itself, I think it might change. I mean, if he goes to the Steelers, I think he'll be in the 103 race. Depending on where these quarterbacks go, I can see it going 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But I'm not upset with Najee going 103 right now.
I do like how you casually insult anybody who has the 103, though. Like, they couldn't have acquired it in a trade, or they couldn't have taken an orphan.
Oh, they could have. I'm saying, that's why I didn't say always. I'm saying usually. There are definitely exceptions.
Yeah, or they're not punting, or they didn't have injuries, or none of those things could have happened. They're just bad at Dynasty. So
I said a few reasons, then that was one of them.
And you said just the one.
No, I didn't. And then I said two.
Bad quarterback play. Yeah, those are your two things. You're either bad at Dynasty or you had bad quarterback play.
Got it. Yeah, and then you need more than one piece. You need more than one running back to become a contender. So you should probably trade back. So that's a few.
Yeah, that's good.
But I mean, there's several more, but those are like the few big ones. But yeah.
Well, but the other thing too is like, I mean, and you know, everyone, again, we were talking about this earlier, you know, Najee's maybe the consensus now, but some people might have ETN first, and people were like Javonte Williams. So because of that, right? So if we tiered that, okay, which we just talked about, you wouldn't take a running back here. Do you know what I mean? That's because you're like, okay, I could take one of the three. They're all fairly close. Maybe I really like one, then another one. But if there's just like the NFL, hey, if there's like this class is really good with corners and tackles, you trade back and then you get your corner or your tackle, and then you can get more value. So if you traded back, if you compare, you can get one of the three running backs, plus you're going to get
a wide receiver,
then that helps that team that much more. So I'm with Izzy on this. I think this should be a quarterback. The other one would be, you want to think of career arc and time, you know, generally of careers, or be your top receiver.
Yeah. And then the next pick at 104, similar situation, Pat Fitzmaurice drafts Ja'Marr Chase. So these quarterbacks are kind of slipping. I think that might be the early surprise here. So Izzy, what do you think?
I don't like it because this wide receiver class is pretty deep. This is another opportunity to trade down. Ja'Marr Chase does provide you with superstar upside, which I think only two receivers actually have superstar upside, and I think that's Smith and Chase. You know, Bateman's my top wide receiver, but I don't think he's superstar upside. I just think he's a really safe, good wide receiver for a really long time. Similar, like, I could see him having a similar career, like, production-wise, like a Thielen or a Diggs. No, not better than Landry. Like a Thielen or a Diggs, where you'll never confuse him as being the best wide receiver in the league or a super, but he could be a star. He just won't be a superstar where we're like Hall of Famer.
Dude, Diggs, like, not Hall of Famer, but Diggs is kind
of
like,
he's not a Hall of
Famer.
Towing
that line.
He's not.
No,
like
no,
a
he's towing. He's towing the line of being top in the NFL.
Okay, sure. But he's not. And he's no matter how, like, he just won't be. He's just really good. He's really, really good. He's going to be 28 years old soon, I think, right? So, I mean.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah, he's going to continue to get better and better and better and better at 28.
No,
but you get what I'm, here's the thing, here's the problem with you. It's like, you get what I'm saying, but you continue to, like, you understand that Diggs is not a Hall of Famer and he's not a superstar. But you still want to fight me because.
No, I do. I think that Diggs is putting himself in the superstar category. Like, people would argue that.
He's not a superstar.
So, but what's your definition of superstar? You have to define that. That helps the conversation.
To me, a superstar is like when you're talking about this person will be a Hall of Fame type player. He will be the best wide receiver. You can argue he is the best wide receiver in the league. That's superstar. You can make the argument.
How many superstar wide receivers in the NFL right now?
And maybe 5, 6.
Who are they?
Devontae, Hopkins, AJ Brown, Well, Julio's a superstar, but he's obviously in the back end of his career, but he's a superstar type player. When AJ Green was a stud, like, he's a superstar. Guys that you could argue for being the best wide receivers in the league.
So Diggs had the most receptions and the most yards last year, and that's not enough.
I don't think he's the best wide receiver in the league. I don't think that if you were drafting wide receivers for a franchise, you wouldn't draft Diggs to be the first overall wide receiver taken. Tyreek Hill,
well, I could see that's being a different standard than being just one of many superstars.
Diggs is a star. He's an exceptional player. But
okay, so we're going mad.
He's not a superstar. Like, he's not the guy where you're bending over backwards to get on your roster as an NFL team. Like, you take five or six or seven other guys ahead of Stephon Diggs.
I agree. That's a different criteria than whether or not he's one of the superstars. So you think he's a star, not a superstar. That's fine. I just think he's closer to being a superstar than you're giving him credit for.
Sure, but he's not. Mm-hmm. He's closer to being a superstar, but he's not. And that's how I feel about Bateman, where I think he could be Diggs.
A star.
A star. I think you'd love to have him on your fantasy team.
He could be the number one receiver in the NFL for receptions and yards.
Yeah, but he won't.
Bateman could be. Yeah.
He could have a year like that where he just pops off and has that year. But I don't know if he'll be a guy that could jostle with the elite. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, Diggs has been around for a handful of years and hasn't put those up. So he has one year where he does that. If Bateman follows that trajectory, you'd be like, yes, I got a great player. But you wouldn't be like, this guy changed my roster for the last 5 years, like a Julio, like a Hopkins, like an Adams, where they've actually been top five wide receivers perennially over time. That's the difference.
I gotcha. Okay.
Cool.
So once again, I don't know what point we're making, but.
So what you're getting at is that this was another opportunity to trade back because guys like Bateman could be just as effective as Jamar Chase, and drafting him at 104 is not the best.
Yeah, like, I'd rather trade down to like 108, 109, 110 and scoop up a early second and a flyer that you like. And then you're getting a Smith or a Bateman, and you're getting another wide receiver that could be a wide receiver two for you. And you're just adding to the missed. Okay. So you could say, and this is what people make, what happens if Chase becomes Julio Jones? Great. Well, what happens if he becomes Laquan Treadwell? What happens if he becomes Corey Davis? What happens becomes Justin Blackman. Like, you're not going to have a superstar in your hand. You're going to have, you might have a good player. You might have like a guy that's on and off, but you can't look and say, you can't hindsight it. You just got to trust it's almost like trusting the process, do the process, get the dart throws, get good players, focus on, okay, if I get enough guys that have high ceilings and high floors, some of them will hit, some of them won't. But if I keep doing that over time, I'll have a winning percentage that's higher than if I just take what I think is the best player at all times.
I just thought of, I can't remember his name, the comedian, is it Connor Mick, whatever, he does the funny, like, he's the comedian, does the NBA ones, and he does the NBA drafts, or the free agencies ones, and he did the trust the process with the Sixers, remember? So it's like, hey, trust the process, you know, like, a few years ago.
Yeah,
I can't not get that out of my head, man. Trust the process is always going to be that. He's a great guy. So here's my question for you. So maybe cut down on time on this. The top four picks should be quarterbacks. Should the top five picks be quarterbacks?
Okay. They never will be. And.
But should they be? That's our debate.
If you have them tiered all together, yes. If you don't like a certain quarterback, then obviously not. But I think from a upside perspective, a longevity thing, it's quarterback. They reign supreme in super flex leagues. It's the hardest position to acquire top talent. And at the end of the day, the best part about this, if you look at historically, just over the last few years, 2017, people let Watson and Mahomes fall into the late first, and they became top 10 quarterbacks very quickly. 2018, we faded Lamar and Josh Allen. They both went second half of first rounds, top 10 quarterbacks. 2020, the first two guys were Burrow and Tua, top half, and then we let Herbert fall, and he became a top quarterback. So out of the top eight quarterbacks right now in Dynasty, Watson, let's just assume before he had his masseuse thing, 5 out of the top 8 quarterbacks were drafted in the second half of first rounds. And it's not because like, oh, just why don't we just fade quarterbacks until then? It's no, it's like we're letting good players fall in drafts. Like just because it's perceived that, okay, we got our top 2 quarterbacks, we can't just keep taking quarterbacks. The answer is keep taking quarterbacks, because as we've seen, now you look at first round startup picks, people are after quarterbacks. So if you're drafting a quarterback in a rookie draft, you're driving that quarterback off of the lot and you're gaining value.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this leads to, we had a conversation off air of just our bias, right? Like even, let's throw in Daniel Jones. People hated Daniel Jones. They're idiots, right? Justin Herbert, he's a bust. You know, that's what our bias and the noise is. But what we say doesn't matter. It's what NFL teams do. They made this investment in this guy. He's going to get 2-3 years starting minimum. Two, 3 years starting on your team at a super flex spot is really valuable. You can trade that away. Look at Sam Darnold. He still got some trade value right now. And he was terrible, terrible for 3 years. I made this comparison on Twitter. People don't like this. I put his stats to Mitchell Trubisky's. Trubisky is so much better than him. And people think Trubisky's trash. But again, it's all this bias. So I'm with you, Izzy. I think the top 4, maybe 5 picks should be quarterbacks here.
And Waylon, just to kind of elaborate a little bit more on your point, you took mine away from my Darnold was one of the guys I listed here, but Izzy's listing off all these successful candidates, you know, like the guys that have really, you know, hit big. And then, you know, somebody's going to bring up a counterpoint and say there's a lot of quarterbacks that haven't made it big.
Like
Trubisky, Wentz, yep. Darnold, Goff, Mayfield. But every single Wentz, Mayfield's come back around.
Wentz is a hit.
This is what I'm getting at. Every single one of these has either come back around or have never really lost their value. So like there's so much insulation in these quarterbacks mm-hmm. in the first round that if you don't believe in them, you have multiple opportunities to get out at small profits or at the same amount that you got for them. So yeah. I think it's
I just traded Sam Darnold for the 110 2 days ago.
Yeah, and where was he drafted in a rookie draft?
I want to say top 5 or 6.
Yeah, so like there's very little degradation in value even in Darnold's case.
And he's been trashed. Like you said, he's been trashed, and I still got a 110, which now I'm probably going to be able to draft a Mac Jones or a Trey Lance at 110 try it again. And eventually I'll hit one of these quarterbacks. I'll just keep.
Yep.
Even Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been great. You're still getting a late first round pick if you need to flip him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wentz, Goff, like, and all of these at any point during the last few years, you could have gotten out. You can still get out, you know.
The only quarterback that I can remember, it just off the top of my mind, that never returned value is Josh Rosen.
Haskins.
He still had some value. Like even in, when he got traded to Miami, you could still have flipped him for that late first. But if you didn't take advantage of that window, it was over. And you haven't been able to. So but once again, it's a very rare instance.
But Dwayne Haskins too. That one fell.
But you still had even like,
oh yeah.
You still were able to get first round pick for him the following year.
Yep.
Yeah.
He came on.
So I think the next conversation I want to have, because this draft, Rich Doxson took Zach Wilson. So, okay, we've covered that. The next one, Ian took Kyle Pitts. I think that's going to be a really good conversation to have here. So, you know, we talked about the 4 or 5 quarterbacks probably should be the first 4 or 5 picks. Okay. And then you have the 3 running backs and you have the receivers. But then the Kyle Pitts, I think, is an interesting conversation too, because Kyle Pitts has taken on this Hall of Fame lure already. And I'm out on it. If he's the 106 here and he's ahead of, in this draft, he's ahead of every other receiver not named Jamar Chase, every other running back not named Najee Harris. He's ahead of Mac Jones and Trey Lance. I'm out. And here's why. Tight ends going that high in a rookie draft, the ROI on that is so risky. He has to be, his career has to be Kelsey, Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates. He's got to be, I mean, even Kittle, it's only the 1 year of Kittle, honestly, where it would be up there. Because if he's a low-end tight end one, or mid to low-end tight end one, it's not worth this pick. And people are like, yeah, but the numbers, okay? Jared Cook has similar combine measurables to him. Evan Ingram, OJ Howard. How many tight ends
Eric
have
Ebron.
We said I mean, yeah, Eric Ebron have been this freak athlete, right? Vernon Davis.
Hawkinson. Right?
He's not a freak, but yeah. But I get what you're saying.
Not a freak. But to me, the ROI is so risky here. We keep talking about this ceiling, right? But the floor is very different. He has to be such a difference maker on your fantasy squad to be this superstar. And I'm not saying I don't like the talent. I like the talent. But there's always a cost to acquire. And I'm like, I'd rather gamble somewhere else. And then like with any tight end, I'll wait until year two, year three, and then I'll try and acquire if I really like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the biggest point is, let's say you draft him 104, 105, 106. I've even heard him going 101 in non-superflex, mm-hmm. as high as 103 in superflex. I saw him go 101 in superflex, but it was a tight end premium. So if you're suggesting he goes 101, 102 in tight end premium superflex league, you're suggesting that he's a first round startup pick. So what you're saying is he's Gronk. And if he's not Gronk, you lose every single time. Kelsey eventually made it there, right, to being that pick. But it's just bad. It's a bad investment. I'm not saying that it can't happen. I think it's definitely in the range of outcomes of him being an absolute stud. But I'm not willing to take that risk, despite him being an exceptional talent, in order to find out if I can get a little bit higher ROI. At the end of the day, people talk about, well, there's an issue with tight ends. Like, there's not a lot of tight ends. True, there isn't. Darren Waller put a massive season. He was the tight end too. You could trade the 106, 107 right now for Darren Waller. Because rookie season, like, it's just at the end of the day, it's a tight end. You know? So he needs to be a top two tight end for him to return even value. And he needs to be the tight end one for him to return more value than what you're drafting him at, especially if you're drafting him higher than this 106. I'm okay at like the 10 in non-superflex. I'm okay with like 109 in tight end premium. I'm okay with him being in the 105, 106 range. I could see an argument for 104, but other than that, I'm out.
It depends on the tight end premium too. Like you can't be 1.25. You know what I mean? It's got to be at least 2. You know what I mean? For me to even think about before 105.
I'm okay with one. If it's 1.5, if I'm getting an extra half point, it adds up over time.
That's not
time.
That much though. Is it that much?
It adds up over time. I mean, might be a couple points a week, 2-3 points a week, depending on how many receptions a tight end gets.
Yeah, you're talking. He's going to get that many. I mean, and also, let's put this out there. What if he's classified as a wide receiver?
I mean, yeah, that changes things. And I don't think it'll happen. But right. If it does, you're losing out on your investment.
Right. Yeah. So there's a small thing in there, too, where, I mean, albeit some, let's say 5% chance that could happen. It's something else to think on. So, I mean, to me, it's such a big risk and people aren't talking about it. You know?
I agree.
Najee Harris is such a safer pick. Etienne is a safer pick. Jamar Chase is a safer pick because of where they're at and their range of outcomes.
Really quick, can you guys guess what age season this will be for Darren Waller?
He'll be 28.
Waylon?
He'll be... See, Kelsey's what, going to be 32? I think he's going to be 29.
He'll be in September. Waller turns 29 before the season begins.
Okay.
When's his birthday?
September 13th.
Dude, nice. I called the month and...
Oh, nice. Nice work. That's just one of the reasons why you can get him for a little bit cheaper is, mm-hmm. some ageism there. But I understand the point you were making there, Izzy, is very productive end, but going for cheap.
His backstory is a great story. That's a guy you want to root for. If you guys don't know the backstory of him and struggling with substance abuse and it kicking him out of the league and him turning a corner, it's a really cool story. Go check it out on YouTube. That's the live side of this. Like, we're talking about guys and whatever. Like, I'm always rooting for humanity and people. Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter what guys I'm against in terms of, Izzy talk about this all the time. It's only a value conversation. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want Kyle Pitts to succeed as a person, as a human, as an NFL player. It's just talking about value. So we'll go watch that one on Darren Waller. It's really cool.
There you go. So Izzy, we're almost up to your pick. So that was 105, Rich Dotson took Zach Wilson. 106, Ian took Kyle Pitts. And then we're on 107, Izzy's drafting at 108. Graham Barfield takes Javonte Williams. I think that was a bit of a surprise personally, but ahead of ETN, ahead of some of the quarterbacks. But what's your breakdown?
At this point, it's becoming, once again, it's personal preference. I have no issue with it. You can make a case for a lot of these guys going here. Once again, I think this will be the common theme. This is a perfect spot to be trading back. The perfect spot to be trading back. You're likely missing out on the superstar players. So like the guys that could be top two or three at their position. And you're in the star territory where a lot of these guys could be. So move back, acquire some picks. I could see ETN falling. I could see Williams falling. So at 107, I could see a draft where Williams goes 107. I can see a draft where he goes 111.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you think, okay, Williams will get taken, I would still trade. And that's your guy. I would still trade down. Just try to fight the urge to take your guys, especially if you're in multiple leagues. You don't, in a draft like this, you should not just be drafting your guy in all of your leagues. Diversify as much as possible, trade back as much as possible, acquire as many dart throws as you can get. It's just the best bet. So 107, yep. Perfect spot to start doing that.
I like it.
And that's what's difficult about mock drafts. Because Ian at 107, if that was his choice, he might have traded down. But, and that's the issue with ADP mock drafts, is that they don't tell the entire story. I bet a handful of these people in this draft would have been trying to trade down or would have changed the draft completely.
Right. Yep. Right. And what we're saying isn't against these people. It's about what we're doing within a mock draft, you know. Yep. And Ian had the sixth, but he took Pitt. So this is Graham that took Javonte. Yep. And then Izzy at eight got who?
McCorkle. Mr. McCorkle. So once again, this is a situation where, to me, I don't think I need to draft Mac Jones 108, but he's the guy that I would pick if I couldn't move my pick over these guys. So in a normal draft, I'm trying to move from 108 to 110, try to get a couple pieces, and then select Mac Jones there. And if he's not there at 110, so I'd take somebody else. What's that?
Why would you move back?
Because I think he'd fall to 110. Huh. I think that right now, if this was a rookie draft, I think I could get him at 110, 111. Mm-hmm. After the draft, that'll probably change because I think he will go based on Vegas odds and everything that we're hearing. Vegas, especially, if Vegas has you at minus 600 to go somewhere, you're likely going somewhere.
Right. And honestly, when we look at this draft right now, I like that because you look at, so 108, there's two quarterbacks that are available. ETN's out there and Devontae Smith and Bateman are out there.
Yeah.
That's right there. That is what, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's five guys that you like. You can move back even further than 110, Izzy, if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and just get a couple more of those dart throws that we're talking about and then scoop up that value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, so I took Mac Jones there. I think that this will end up being, if he goes to San Fran, I think his range will be in the 106 to 108 range. So I think right now it might be a stretch. And I'm okay with that. But I would take him if I had to draft somebody at that spot.
There you go. And then up next from Dynasty Dummies, Zach Reed drafts Rondale Moore. Again, not a huge surprise there.
I think it's a massive. I think that's the biggest surprise of the draft.
Yep.
Why?
I don't think I would be surprised if he went 109 in any draft moving forward. He might go 1 out of 10 times.
Isn't he in that same tier as all the rest?
No. I mean, I think I don't see how you could take him ahead of Devonta Smith, for example, or ATN or Trey Lance. I just don't. I think he could be. I have
Bateman.
Or Bateman. I think he's going to be a good player. I think he could be a good player. There's so many things working against him that it makes it difficult to see him overcome all of it to hit his ceiling and be the 109. I think you can easily get him 112, 201.
So right, you think now he's more in the Taylen Wallace, Rashad Bateman tier, more so than this one?
No, I think he's in the top 14, but I think he's in the bottom end of that top 14.
Right,
I think you could be getting him at 201, 202 even.
Right, and I'm a huge Rondale Moore fan. And I have been forever within Debbie and chatting with him on any, you know, pot I'm on. But he's my sixth wide receiver. I mean, there's also Terrace Marshall, too. We're not talking about. So you have all these receivers. And right now, that's another one where it's like, if that's your guy, move back three or four picks, gain some more value. You know, and the other thing, too, we keep talking about this, like, hey, move back and get another pick. Move back, get whatever. The draft is the best time to get veterans. You move back three or four picks and you flip and you get that tight end. Because now it's like, you're like, oh, I don't care, whatever. That's when maybe you could get your tight end, or you could get your wide receiver three, or you can get a good, you know, RB3, or you upgrade your backup quarterback. People that think, well, that's just dumb. There, you know how many times I've done that? And I'm like, wow, that saved my season because now my quarterback isn't QB20. He's QB8 as my backup or something, you know? So now's the time to like, hey, I'm going to go from 109 to, as I said, let's say 201 to get Rondale Moore, the same guy, but I upgraded my whole team.
I like it.
Yeah. So definitely the biggest surprise. And once again, biggest issue with mock drafts, I guarantee Zach would be trying to move down in that situation and not just take. People always say, just get your guys, which is sometimes true, but you should get them in the right places. You shouldn't get your guys and forgo capital.
Yep.
So it's like, if you can do both, do both. Get your guy and get capital. And if you happen to miss out on your guy, you still have capital to fall back on, and you can still get a really good player. Like,
there you go.
Value. Capital is king. Yeah.
Value.
And then drafting right behind Zach, Andy Singleton goes with Trey Lance.
Yep.
Yep. I think that's a really good value at 110. Yeah.
Yep.
And then Samantha Holt at 111 follows that up with Travis Etienne.
Great value.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you guys can cover all three of these picks together. I just wanted to rattle them all off so we can complete the draft here. And then the HQ podcast crew finishes things off in the first round with Devonta Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Bateman and Waddle at 201, 202. Terrace Marshall, 203. Like, it's just, yeah.
So to me, I mean, those I'll go with Izzy, with Mac, Lance, Etienne, and Smith. And I'm not even a big Trey Lance fan. Those are the best values. By far. And that's what you're chasing right now. You're just chasing value. And so, you know, people could argue with Devontae Smith as the wide receiver one, and look where Jamar Chase went. He went 104. People could argue that Etienne is the top running back and Najee Harris went 103. That's what you're doing within this draft this year, or especially right now. You know, if you don't care about the landing spots, you're doing this to gain value. And I have some drafts that are ahead of the NFL draft. I have one coming up, I think, this week. So I'm going to be pumped, where I can draft guys based on the talent and do just what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I can see a world where Smith is the best wide receiver in this class.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can get him 8 picks later and that's still in the range of outcomes, great.
Yep.
But yeah, so I think that's within ATN, one of those things, like, I agree. So with him, I think he has the biggest floor to ceiling in this class, where I could see him being an absolute stud, and I can see him being a complete bomb of a player. So to me, he's got some great, the upside's so great. I mean, I could see him being that Clinton Portis type, where he's got that extra, you know, and I can see him being a CJ Spiller, where it just never happens for him.
Can you tell me why the floor is low?
Because I feel like he's straight line. When you look at some of these guys that have been drafted in the past and guys in the league that can create for themselves, and this is kind of a big issue I had with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry in a bad situation is not going to be Derrick Henry. He's not going to be able to work out of those situations. Where I feel the same way about Travis Etienne. Like, if you give him something, he will take it. But if you don't give him something, I don't think he'll be able to create it.
To me, I think it's a style thing, you know, and that's the other part that people don't look so in depth on just in general is like, let's take Adrian Peterson, for example. Adrian Peterson's style as a runner was not to take the handoff. And let's say the aiming point was B gap on the right side. He wasn't a guy that's like, you know what, I'm going to cut this all the way back and go C gap on the left side and do razzle dazzle and all that kind of stuff. Look, some guys can do. He's going to look B gap, to A gap to backside A, and he's going to hit that thing. And then when he's one-on-one with the linebacker, then he does his Adrian Peterson, I've got like great ankle and like bend flexion, and that's how he makes guys miss, and he has some power and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's his style. But then you get Le'Veon Bell, David Montgomery, et cetera, where they take the handoff, and then they sit behind the line of scrimmage, and then they dance, and then they find a hole, and they go. Like, there's so many different styles to it that I think people aren't giving Etienne the credit of his flexibility and his style, because we've seen a lot of, I think, jukey players lately come into the league. And Cam Akers is a guy like, so again, I was against coming in, and I say against, like, he was like my RB5, like, oh my. But he developed and became a little bit more of going within that zone scheme style, where he would only go between a couple of gaps, and it worked out better for him. Which, I mean, how many times did Cam Akers take it and you saw him like shake and bake a bunch and then go? That's just not who he is either.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but here's the thing. ATN, once again, he's my top running back. And Cam Akers was my top running back last year. So it's like,
right.
Once again, Cam Akers, I wouldn't draft him first, but he's my favorite. And same thing with ATN. I wouldn't draft him first, but he's my favorite. And I understand the risks that come with ATN, but I would still love to have ATN in any draft at the right place because I recognize his floor.
I got to, just since we're on the ETN subject, somebody relatively high profile on Twitter tweeted out his ETN comps. I don't know if it was a comp thing, but he basically just said, the reason I love ETN is because his acceleration and speed, and it's reminiscent of Bo Jackson and Chris Johnson. And I thought that was like a little ridiculous.
I don't take it that far. I take Clinton Portis. Yeah, I can see.
Sure.
And Clinton Portis was, once again, I think he was maybe 4.3, but we thought Etienne would be in the 4.3s. And like his juice on the field is more than 4.4. And I venture to guess that he put on weight to look bigger, but it did take away from his speed because he doesn't look like 2.15. And the exact opposite happened with Williams, where he went from much bigger to 210. So ETN actually checked in 5 pounds heavier than Javonte Williams. But if you put them side by side when they're on the field wide, like, Williams looks significantly heavier to me.
And Williams still didn't run a good time.
Yeah, and he still struggled to run a good time. So, I mean, that's a huge concern.
This is not his game.
But yeah.
I think that ETN is a 4.3 guy because he ran step for step or beat. Who's it? Simmons. Who's who ran at what, 4.39? Which is, he's just a sick athlete, but they're neck and neck. So I mean, that's just what he is, I think. And again, that's another reason why, who cares about pro days and combines? You watch what happens on the field, and that gives you a gauge of what actually matters, because decision making, aggressiveness, confidence matter.
Yeah, and I talked about Javonte Williams being, so at the time when he ran it, I was like, not a big deal. 4.6 is totally fine, but it becomes a big deal if he adds the 15 pounds back. And now is running 4.7s. That's when the issue becomes, because now we have between 4.4 and 4.6, we have range that's a normal range for running backs. We've seen studs in between 4.4 and 4.6. There's really not much. You'd rather be 4.4 than 4.6 for success, but it's minimal in terms of the difference. But once you get into the 4.7s, the list of players actually making fantasy impacts dwindles.
It's not good.
It's just the hit rate drops significantly. So it's possible, not probable. But once again, in the first round, I'm trying to be safe, especially in the top 5, 6, 7 picks. And then once I get to the back half of the first, upside becomes, okay, how can I turn this 110, 111 into a 101 next year?
But I think that's such a great thing that people get so fixed on, they want their guy. You should be playing it more safe within drafts. Like, and then also the other factor is like, we would like, and this is again why my process was so against Antonio Gibson last year. He didn't have the stats. So like, you want guys that have more stats, right? More years of stats than less. So like, that's why, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, go Davis Mills, like, they don't have that many stats or games started versus Trevor Lawrence. Okay, so it's a bit of a safer prospect, And then same thing with like running backs. You know, okay, so stats is part of it, but the other one part of it, you know, when Izzy's talking about size and speed and stuff, the other one is like injury history. You know, so like when you're talking about safety, you know, when I'm like these guys that are in this tier together, how you differentiate, it's like, okay, who's had a couple of injuries? Like, oh, well, you know, injuries, they're not in the field, could happen, you know. And so then you start, that's how you dwindle that out in terms of, okay, the risk versus the safety. And, you know, you need guys on the field and producing to win your fantasy matchups.
Yeah. What do you think of, so Zach Wilson started, right, for multiple years, but he wasn't anywhere near the quarterback he is, or he was in 2020. Does that matter to you, where it's kind of like, okay, quarterback, and then bang, has a monster season. Is that more concerning than just that one big year as the starter, where your first opportunity you hit big, versus somebody that struggled for 2 years and then hits it big in 1 year?
To me, I kind of like it more, to be honest, because the more, so this is just quarterback wise, the more that a team has film on a quarterback, the more you can see their tendencies, which I talked about, right? Justin Fields, mm-hmm. like work in the middle of the field, you know, Zach Wilson, he'll throw anywhere, you know. I think Trevor Lawrence likes throwing deep shots, you know, like Justin Fields likes to throw deep too. He's a little bit inaccurate, but anyway, so if you have all of this film on a quarterback and you see what their tendencies are, and then they still make this huge improvement, you know what I mean? That means that something within their game, and that also speaks, I think, to their resiliency, their ability to learn, hey, what do I need to work on? And they did it. You know, like mm-hmm. Corey Davis continually got better in his 4 years, which is what one thing I really liked about him. Andy Dalton continually improved at TCU. And those are things that you like to see, because you don't want them to plateau and like, well, that's just who they are. And they never got better. Like, oh man, there's a guy I'm trying to think of.
But don't you think, while you're thinking of who that is, I get what you're saying. But in 2018, he threw 1,500 yards, had 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions in 9 games. In 2019, he went 2,300 yards, 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And then in 2020, he went to 3,700 yards, 33 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. So like, the progression wasn't like, okay, he's getting better. He was good, but now he's great. He went from meh to wow.
Isn't that Mac Jones too?
Well, Mac Jones didn't really have the opportunity.
Well, I'm just saying, but he looked like, and then boom, Joe Burrow, same thing.
No, but they didn't have seasons. Like, I'd agree, but they didn't have like a season of track record in Alabama in 2019. But in 2019, Mac Jones had 1,500 yards, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions in cleanup duty for, in these games, which is in line with his 2020. So like, if you look at his yards per attempt, you look at his intended yards per attempt, you look at his quarterback rate, you look at touchdown to interception ratio, it matches the larger sample size of 2020. Or if you look at Mac Jones or Zach Wilson, none of the numbers match up. It is a complete just jump off the page.
Well, okay, go to Joe Burrow then. Same thing.
Okay.
Joe Burrow was like, what do we have? And then like, best season ever.
Yeah, he went from, he had 2,900 yards, 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and then bumped that up to 5,600, 60-6.
Yeah. And so, and you know, and again, we know, and I've spoke to this, I can't tell you how many times, and I continually will, is that the 2019 LSU offense is one of the best ever, but every piece in that offense, we treat like it's the best ever. Joe Burrow's elite, Joe Brady's elite, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is 101, Justin Jefferson now is going to be superstar, Jamar Chase, Hall of Fame level talent, Terrence Marshall now, some people have him as like wide receiver 3, like every piece of that can't be. And we look at Joe Brady last year, their offense was, I think, 24th or 26th in points. They had no elite category. People are like, yeah, but Christian McCaffrey. Okay, tell me an offensive coordinator that had DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and Curtis Samuel. That's pretty good too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know that it's not perfect, but there's always these excuses like, you know, Sam Darnold goes there and they're like, yeah, but Joe Brady's there. Now, could he be? Sure. But now we have 1 year sample size where it's like, maybe he's not. And maybe maybe it was the players that made that. You know what I mean? It's just something to think on as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty well-rounded coverage of a one-round rookie mock. And the coolest thing is going to be to come back to this and find out exactly where all of these guys are going to be taken after the NFL draft locations, because just like many famous people have said, the NFL draft changes literally everything. I think that the tiers are going to probably be pretty relatively consistent at least, but it's going to be fun to come back to this. But with that, the final segment of the podcast, if you're listening to DMX music, turn it down really low and maybe like slow it down a couple of times. So it's like a little bit of a slow song, not quite as angry, because it's time for Nick Whalen and his final thoughts.
So this is going to be actually draft related, but I want everyone that listens to this to gain value. We want you guys to do well in your teams. So we've been talking about this 2021 class, but the 2022 class is not good. The value there is not good. Now, I know players can still develop over this next year. And again, just like Javonte Williams this year and every year, some guys will pop up. But the amount of talent that's available next year just doesn't hold a candle to what normal drafts are. So when you want to look through, I mean, Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell, some people really like them. I don't think that they're at the level of quarterbacks that we have this year or in past years, for example. The top of it, and running backs, Breece Hall, I like. Isaiah Spiller, I'm not as crazy about. Kyren Williams, Eric Gray, Zamir White, etc. They're okay. I don't see this greatness there. Wide receivers, David Bell is good. I don't think he's great. George Pickens, just towards ACL. Garrett Wilson, some people really love him. Treylon Burks, Chris Olave, etc. That's the top tier of this class. And so what I am encouraging you to do, as you're having these trade negotiations, as these drafts are going on, I would not be afraid to move your 2022 first to get a good talent or really improve your team for 2021, because you can get out of that draft before people realize it's not as good as people would think.
And then when people do finally realize it's not as good as they think, then you want to trade back in, because there's going to be guys like Joe Burrow and Mac Jones that are just going to have this once, you know, flash in the pan season, their, you know, junior or senior year, where they didn't have a track record going into that. And then you can get back in and get those guys again, right? For cheaper than...
Potentially, yeah. But I mean, to me, it's just like, if you can get the value for the pick, I would do it. And I mean, I'm actually going to do that in my leagues too, just because... And I really... And I'm a classic, you know, I really like the young guys. This next class is going to be good, et cetera. But the 2023 class, on the other hand, crazy talented. It's going to be amazing, but not 2022.
I disagree with your final thoughts, even though I don't like disagreeing with final thoughts, because it should be the final thoughts and we should end the podcast. But I will say that trading, no matter how bad the 2022 class is, trading the 2022 first now is a losing proposition in terms of the value, because you're having to discount that so much that it's already baking in a far worse class than what it's going to be. And every year we have the same thing where like a class may not look as good, and then we get hyped. We go through 3 months every year, January to April, where we find things to love and people find players to love and promote mm-hmm. them and so on and so forth. And these picks will continue to drive up in value. So like what you're trading your 2022 first now, you're going to be trading that for less than what you're going to be able to trade that pick for later, no matter how bad the class is. So that's the only thing I don't like. But other than that, I agree with you on the class being significantly worse. But it's really difficult to take advantage of that and maximize the pick value, because right now everybody's after 2021 first. So you're going to have to give up a lot on top of your 2022 first to get into the 2021 class. And you're not really baking in all of that value. So it just makes it difficult.
So you agree with the thought, just not the timing.
I agree with the thought, but being able to execute on getting rid of the 2022 first, it's going to be difficult to get 2021s with it. So
right. Well, I'm not saying give it away for a mid second. Like, I'm not saying that. It depends on what your ROI is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it's like, I think a lot of people view it and saying, well, I'm here now, I want to draft this player. It's always more advantageous to get future picks because they're so discounted than it is to get the future picks that people aren't really, that's not on their mind. Like, nobody's sitting.
Trade,
like, go ahead.
Would you trade random 2022 first for 110?
Yes. I'd rather have anything in the first round this year than anything later, just because I know I can, I should be getting more than just a straight up 2022 random.
Right. So that's what I would be shooting for. Something in that range where it's, you know, maybe it's past the superstars people think, and you could still go on and you could get your Waddle, et cetera, type guy, because next year's class, I just don't think Jalen Waddle will be hands down the top receiver next year. You know what I mean? So that's what I'd be shooting for. Now, if it's, hey, I'll give you the 205, then I'd pass. Keep that second or that first next year.
Yeah, I guess it's league dependent, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. That is the end of the podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in once again next week. Follow us on Twitter at FFDynastyTrades is the main handle. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Got me up late. Gotta make another trade for Sunday. Hey, can't wait. Not enough bait. Frost on my opponent's gonna call cupcakes in. It's no hate. Just facts. There's just no way. I'm last. Technically, I'm last.